Hello, my name is Michael, and you're listening to Forever Sound Version, a video game music podcast. Dear friends, and welcome to episode 34 of this podcast, Forever Sound Version. My name is Scary Michael Bridgewater, and today I have a guest. Spooky Robert Hunter is here. Hello, Spooky Robert Hunter.
Hello. You should have gone for Mike Ghoul.
Mike Ghoul Bridge.
Witcher.
Witchwater. Yeah. And help me out.
More tortured.
No, we're
not. Horror puns.
Yeah. Indeed, this is going to be a Halloween-themed episode. We're going to hear some scary tracks from some scary games and not-so-scary games that just so happen to have some spooky motifs in them. Some veteran listeners might recognise Rob from the Master System episode.
Yes.
Which was quite some time ago, yes. So it's good to have you back on. Thanks a lot for making it out on this chilly October evening. Feel like I'm a little bit late to the party in a way, because a lot of other VGM podcasts I've been following, like Pixel Tunes Radio and Rhythm and Pixels, all the Pixel podcasts, have been going with like Halloween-themed episodes recently. So this is my effort from across the pond. And kicking us off was BGM 2 from the Game Boy Color version of Ghosts and Goblins, which was released in 1999. The credit for the sound programmer is Jeremy Meeker. And yeah, that's I thought that was an appropriately spooky sort of track to get us in there for a notoriously difficult side-scrolling game, which has been on several different systems. Like, I've played it on the Commodore 64 at some length, and I still can't get beyond the second level because it's just so hard. Do you know this game?
Yes, but not, like, only from seeing other people play it and, you know, seeing it in magazines and Games Master and stuff as a kid. But that music definitely has sort of like children's television grade, like,
ooh.
Yeah, like that sort of rising melody over the top while still having the sort of the drive of a platformer.
Right.
Like the drive, like underneath, just sort of like pushing on while still being like, oh, it's spooky, there's, you know, skeletons coming out of their graves.
Yeah, right. It definitely suits the difficulty level of the game as well. And just like the way that the melodic voice, like the main lead voice, has this like really heavy modulation on the pitch, so it's like always bending back and forth, gives it a really unsettling quality as well. I've got a nagging suspicion we're going to hear quite a lot of that sort of effect as we roll through the chip-based pieces of music on this show. Also, we're going to have some pieces from some kind of Redbook audio sort of systems, like the PS1. And I understand your first pick is a PS1 pick.
Yeah, it's a real change of pace. I've been trying to stay away from the really obvious stuff, but my first pick is Resident Evil
1. I think we have
the
really
PlayStation 1 version.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does really well is sound, in the early stages at least, sound haunting.
Right.
Which is where we start, on the first floor of the mansion.
Mm. It's a kind of a shame that maybe the voice acting doesn't quite measure up to unsettling music, right?
Yeah, it has a, that it adds to its charm. And having, I've just come from a friend's Halloween film marathon.
Okay.
Where you get to see Italian films dubbed into English.
Right.
And, you know, there's something about that grade of voice acting that sort of adds to a certain B-movie aesthetic.
Right.
Even though the rest of Resident Evil keeps things pretty tight for its time.
Sure. 1996. Real pioneer for this type of genre, I suppose. Even that Walking Dead game, I remember you playing a whole lot a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Telltale's version of The Walking Dead, not the game of the TV show, which is a first-person shooter.
Oh, not that one. No. Right, yeah.
The one that's just sad and horrible for 12 hours until you feel guilty just for playing it.
Yeah, I was just watching and I felt pretty desperate. But yeah, this is a Resident Evil. Is it fair to say it kicked off this type of game?
Yeah.
Popularized it?
You've got Alone in the Dark beforehand.
Okay.
Amiga, I think.
Right, right.
For the earliest versions of Alone in the Dark. But basically all the tropes of the genre were solidified in Resident Evil 1.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into this. You have a couple of picks.
Yes. There is Mansion First Floor and the Save Room.
Save Room. Yeah, so, yeah, this Save Room track does appear to be pretty popular. Composers for this, I have here Makoto Tomozawa, Akari Kaida, and Masami Ueda. Here's Mansion First Floor and Save Room from Resident Evil. Mansion First Floor and Save Room from Resident Evil by Capcom. So, opening with two Capcom titles here. Coincidence, I suppose. A spooky coincidence. These are great, and that Save Room track is very familiar. Gets under your skin a little bit, that one.
Yeah, and you can sort of almost hear, because it's got that really distinctive sort of PS1 menu sound when you're negotiating your... Because in the save room, you can sort of access your larger inventory.
Yeah.
And, like, even just listening to that for a couple of loops, you can hear, like, the storage chest creak open and, you know, sort of the sound of, like, the typewriter for saving clacking away. Mm. It's all just sort of in there in that sort of peaceful little oasis, because that save music's the same throughout the game.
Mm-hmm. So it gets, like, really familiar.
Yeah, so it's always, like... And it never fakes you out by having a save room become dangerous. Like, right. I imagine it probably would in a newer game.
Mm.
Or some games would. You know, there's never, like, the fake out of, oh, I've made it, there's something there. Mm. It's, like, it's always, that music means, you know, calm, sort of...
It's a bit of respite.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Especially with, like, the choices of sounds, a kind of harp, I suppose, like a kind of low harp notes playing in them, kind of repeating minimalist type figures. I suppose it does, with the sense of regularity you get from that kind of figure, maybe it will put you at ease for a few fleeting moments as you're looking through your weapons and things. We're talking about shotguns. Shotgun was always the classic Resident Evil weapon, right? Like the one you would gravitate towards.
It's the one that you kind of, you get these, like the one that you'll keep a hold of for most of the game, and then you get the more powerful one weapon to one-shot stuff, but it's only as you enter the final act.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, then Resident Evil 2 came through with the spark shot and daft things like that.
Yeah, the little grenade launchers.
Right, right.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, these games we're covering are oftentimes pretty gory, and Resident Evil had gore in spades, which I don't remember being particularly controversial. It seemed like the sort of title that would maybe get certain brackets of people hot and bothered, but...
Yeah, I think it might have had that thing that you had, you know, like the Nintendo Mortal Kombat Blood Code.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Legend. I think in some territory, some of the blood might have been changed to green instead of red.
Oh, right, yeah.
But yeah, not here in the UK.
Yeah, we got the blood.
Yeah.
It was all there. Couldn't get away from it.
With Barry kind of finding that pool at the very start.
Mm.
Is, what is this? Blood?
If it was green, maybe that little bit of voice acting would have made a bit more sense. I don't know.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, well. All right, we're going to go from a game which is definitely a horror game to a game that is definitely not a horror game, I would suggest. My pick is Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo, released in 1990. And the composer is, of course, Koji Kondo, who really doesn't need all that much of introduction. And I think his strongest work's in the 16-bit era, so things like A Link to the Past's soundtrack. That's a masterpiece in my book. But the Super Mario World soundtrack's fantastic as well, and there are a couple of tracks in amongst its soundtrack that I think are kind of spooky in the same sort of way as that first track I opened the show with. And those are for The Haunted House, which is glaringly obvious, I suppose. But also the fortress music, so the music that you would hear in the castles as you're approaching the various Koopa bosses of Super Mario World. So I'm going to play these two back to back. We're going to have Haunted House and then Fortress from Super Mario World. Okay, we just had Haunted House, followed by Fortress, composed by Koji Kondo for Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo. I'll just address Haunted House quickly, the shorter track we heard. It's really quite an unsettling piece of music, that, just for how it, the volume swells on that, like, you know, that kind of bit. It gets like kind of starts really quiet, then gets a little bit louder, then the volume dips again. So it definitely has a haunted sort of sound to make it very appropriate for the haunted ghost houses, they're called in the game, isn't it? The ghost houses and all the different sections of the game. And then Fortress sort of cranks up the spookiness to, you know, several degrees higher. Although it's more like a Castlevania-y sort of take on like spooky music, I think.
Yeah, it's not a sort of Halloween pumpkin level.
No.
But it's got that in the music, the sort of spooky vibe.
Right.
And like I was saying when we were listening to it, having just come away from watching horror films all day with someone else.
Yeah.
They'd had that kind of vibe that we watched Tenebrae, and it's got both of them sort of have the goblin thing of sort of an underlying theme that sort of builds across the track and spikes up.
Mm.
See, to sort of keep things unsettled.
Yes, and you know that when you hear that, then there's nothing normal about to happen, like something a little bit heightened is about to go down, sort of thing.
Yeah, and being able to sort of do it on a couple of different levels without needing to be bombastic.
That's it. Well, I think this is an example of a composition that the SNES, or SNES if you're from around our way, sound hardware can handle it really well because of its 8-channel sample-based sound hardware. Just with recreating certain types of orchestral-esque kinds of sounds, whereas I don't think an FM synthesis-based machine like the Mega Drive could necessarily do the same kind of job as convincingly. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, like, it's got a real, not lush, but a real full sound to it.
Just
it
kind
doesn't
of
have the
warm.
Like, we'll get, like, yeah, it has a warm, you won't get, like, when we had with Ghosts and Goblins, or we'll have with the next track where it's not that, and it sort of really kind of has an abrasive punchiness to it.
Mm.
You don't get that with, and I guess because they're Mario games as well, but it does have a smoothness to it and a roundness to the sound.
I think
while
so, yeah.
Retaining atmosphere within it.
Yeah, really nicely done from Koji Kondo there. And next up, we're sticking with Nintendo but going one console back to the NES, and this is your pick from a licensed game.
Yeah, I think it might have been a couple of months ago when I suggested wanting in on a Halloween episode is because I'd seen the new version of Friday the 13th game, and in that you play as Campers or as Jason.
Right.
And it has Jasons from all the different films, but one of the Jasons it has is Jason from one of the old licensed games, and he's a two-colour purple body, blue mask.
Oh, wow.
And in that new game, when Jason's nearby, it'll play. The music doesn't start until the closer he is to you. It's dynamic, so if you're escaping, the music follows the Jason character.
Mm, okay.
And the licensed game 8-bit Jason plays instead of like the creepy score from the actual movie that Jason represents.
Oh, that's a nice touch.
He comes at you blasting harsh, like chip tune. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
This isn't the exact track, but this is from the NES, NES,
NES
Famicom.
Fine. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever you want to call it.
Version of Friday the 13th, which is a sort of weird mix of side scrolling, jumping over zombies.
Mm.
There are no zombies in Friday the 13th, but, you know, for gameplay's sake.
Yeah, we've got to have some zombies in this.
And sort of going into cabins to, I think you have to light 8 campfires.
Right.
But before Jason kills all of your protagonists.
Or your party, if you like.
Yeah. And you sort of, so each life effect, like, so each time that you die, you start as a new character and have to continue progressing the mission.
Okay, yeah.
The same as if you ever played Aliens on the Commodore.
Right.
It did the same thing.
Ah, I see.
you know, as having an in-game explanation of the life system.
Yeah, nice
going,
to have
you're just playing a different character.
Yeah, that's a nice way of doing it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And being the kind of game this is, and for the system it is, the outdoor music is quite chirpy and upbeat. This plays indoors and on the map screen, and it's a lot more unsettling.
That it is. I've had a little sneaky listen in advance, and it's definitely one of the more unsettling pieces of NES music I've heard. Another thing about this game, from what I understand, it's kind of derived from not just the original Friday the 13th, but kind of takes elements from the first seven films.
Yeah.
So, like, the developer, Altus, exercised quite a lot of artistic license to make something that's recognisably Friday the 13th-y, but also taken stuff from a lot of the films to make a functioning game, right?
Yeah, and with a horror character like Jason, most of the sort of iconography of Jason isn't from the first film.
Right, okay.
Because he isn't in it. He isn't that sort of stalking, you know, unbeatable monster that he is in all the later films. He just isn't in. The first one is Jason's mother getting revenge on Jason for Jason's death rather than like Jason doing the killing.
Yeah, right.
So sort of all. But yeah, this game has. I haven't played it myself, but watching YouTube let's plays and things, that for how limited the gameplay is, there's elements of all kinds of different bits in there.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's pretty likely I'll find myself playing a game around Halloween, just as to sit down and play a spooky game sort of thing. And this is pretty high on my list, just to give it a try, see if it's much good. Let's have a track from this then. We've got Crystal Lake Camp Map, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. And that is composed by Hirohiko Takayama from Friday the 13th, released in 1989 on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Classic NES noise channel drumming on that. Zero subtlety, just... I'd love to hear that sort of thing. That was Crystal Lake Camp Map from Friday the 13th on the NES. And that's a really nice pick. Definitely consistent with the nastiest stuff on this show, I think. But, you know, it's nicely done. It's nicely realised with using two channels for the main voice, so you can have this really quick slapback delay effect on the main melody to give it a kind of a spatial thing going on. And then the chord changes are sort of, I don't want to say jazzy, but it's not like your run-of-the-mill NES track, is it? Like,
no.
It's going around the houses a bit.
I mean, I didn't have an NES, but I always, I don't really associate Nintendo with that kind of... Like, it looks like the sort of thing that you'd get on, like, a Spectrum or a Commodore, like, a sort of, not quite homebrew, but you know, when people can kind of make games of anything, and you think, well, Nintendo's always a bit more family friendly, a bit more controlled than that, and then they've got Friday the 13th,
yeah,
and it sounds really like gravelly and gnarly.
Right, yeah. So it's a, like a breath of horrible air into the pantheon of NES titles, perhaps.
Yeah, and that gravelly stomp is really something,
right?
When you compare it to what the SNES was doing on the last game.
Sure, and especially working within that some kind of 3-4, I don't want to say waltzy time, but you can imagine this as a horrible waltz sort of thing, and it's
kind of
marking time.
Of swing to it,
right? Sort of lilting around.
Yeah,
very nice stuff. Friday the 13th there. I'm going to try that one out and
Nightmares. There's definitely a sort of woozy otherworldliness to it.
Yeah, sure. It looks the part, no doubt.
I'd like to see the game in action beyond a let's play sometime.
Yeah, I think you have to try it yourself probably. All right, we're going forward a little more to the Sega Mega Drive, and this is Splatterhouse 3. Oh yes, a very, very, very gory beat 'em up taking place in a mansion. So you know from the title itself, Splatterhouse, that you're getting a lot of
blood. It sounds like a made-up game for The Simpsons.
Like Bone Stormers. That sort of thing, no doubt. And this is another game that I'll probably crack out around actual Halloween to give myself a little bit of a scare. Any experience with this one?
No, I'm new to the series.
Okay, this is a lot of fun, actually.
I recognise the title, like I'm aware of it as a title.
Right.
But it's not something that I played.
I see.
Or knew anyone who had, actually.
Our friend Gareth introduced me to this one many years ago, and we always had it down as a kind of a 90s video game equivalent of a video nasty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just really low rent, kind of gratuitous horribleness.
Yeah, start doing trauma games rather than toxic Avenger movies.
It's pretty rough on the violence, and but the music's very interesting though. I think there's quite a lot to sink your teeth into on the soundtrack, composed by Eiko Kaneda. We're going to hear Stage 1 and then Ending Jennifer and David Dead, which is a fantastic title. So Stage 1 first, and I think the bass and drums on this track are like really quite a lot of fun to follow. They sound very driving and urgent, which is what you'd expect from a beat-em-up's first level, perhaps, you know, try and get you into the game. And of course what comes later is pretty harrowing, but for the time being you're enjoying playing a game, so let's have that, and then we'll get into something altogether different right after. Splatterhouse 3.
Thank you.
Splatterhouse 3, 1993 Sega Mega Drive. Nice stuff there. We just had stage one and ending, Jennifer and David dead. And you're just looking at a couple of little screenshots and things there.
What
do you reckon?
It looks great.
It's great. Like, it is great.
There's something Castlevania, but I guess that's just in the sort of color palette, the sort of being able to have big bald monsters.
Hmm.
But even the protagonist is sort of hockey mask wearing, carrying weapons, sort of punching monsters.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty stuff. So that first track, it's kind of an odd one because you do get the. I'm beginning to wonder how many times I'm going to say spooky in this podcast. I'm going to say it again. It's got just an air of spooky about it, but it's also like that could be a shoot 'em up sort of track as well, and how it kind of spurs you forward, like a Japanese shoot 'em up type thing from the 90s. And then that ending track is a different animal entirely, like very quite elegant in its way, in this melancholic thing it's got going on.
Yeah, and I'm guessing with the title like that and sort of just from the screenshots that I've looked at, there must be different endings where you can save different combinations of the characters.
That's exactly right.
Presumably there's one that's more upbeat where you've managed to save everyone, or...
Yes, that's exactly right,
I don't know how many characters there
are involved,
but...
It depends on your wife and your son. So if, this... track we had here is obviously the bad ending, which is the one I went with because maximum bleakness, maximum Halloween, you know what I mean? It's a no-brainer. The other track is just not quite as much fun, it's not quite as much fun, so I had to go with this one. And yeah, if you do succeed in rescuing your wife and son, then yeah, you'll hear the lesser track, in my opinion. So there's an incentive to not play the game properly.
It doesn't look that there's spooky fun games that we're using tonight, but this looks like such a grim game that I think you'd want the grim soundtrack.
Yeah, you don't watch horror films because you want a happy ending, do you?
No.
So,
no,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, my movie marathon today, I've seen 94 people killed.
Well, that's
and
quite a body
deer,
count.
And a deer, a goat, a cow, and 7 werewolves. This is like 4 films.
Yeah, it's serious.
Yeah.
Alright, let's move this on a little more, and we're going to something relatively contemporary, actually.
Yeah, I wanted to keep with Forever Sound. I always get the feeling it's not always... I'm saying this having picked Resident Evil, but ignore that for a second.
Okay.
And think that, in general, it's not... While we recognise the classics...
Yes.
It's also kind of going for not the most obvious games, or sort of branching out a bit more. We could have done Resident Evil, Castlevania, Silent Hill.
Sure.
And then moved on to, I don't know, Slender Man or whatever's in vogue.
Okay.
That kind of thing. And, there'll be good tracks on, obviously, Castlevania, Symphony of the Night.
Oh, it's a classic soundtrack.
But that's also been used on another podcast. So in double keeping with Forever Sound, no repeats.
No repeats.
So this game is an indie game from... It started in 2013, but it was released episodically.
Right.
To play in browser and then released later on standalone on Steam and I always call it GOG.com because it used to be Good Old Games.
But GOG,
but I know people say GOG as well.
Yeah,
you can get it on both. And then, yeah. And I know I got it from GOG or GOG, and it came with the soundtrack.
Oh, nice.
As a bonus.
That's cool.
Kind of album of
MP3s. Like a pack-in thing.
Yeah. And this is The Last Door, which is a sort of turn-of-the-century Edgar Allan Poe, Robert Louis Stevenson...
Mm.
Lovecraft sort of
fantastical sort of imagery,
sort of dark, sort of sad, haunted M.R. James as well, the ghost stories M.R. James. It's not an action title, it's a point and click adventure game, although it's quite light on the puzzles and it's more about exploring the story. There's only one bit of sort of get the pipe to remove the cloth to dunk water and that loosens a feather.
Yeah, that's music to my ears.
Which attracts a crow and gets you the key to the basement. There's only one bit like that.
Man, I'm hopeless at those puzzles, so that's good news for me.
The rest of it is sort of relatively simple, sort of in a single room puzzles where, you know, it might be rearranging the pictures on the wall, that kind of thing.
Got you.
But it's mainly text bait. The graphics are really pixelated.
They're blocky, aren't they?
Yeah, really blocky. Like, not like, I know pixel art's kind of in vogue for indie games in general, but it's really distinct even to that.
Sure.
And within it, they do get some really horrific imagery. The game opens with someone hanging themselves.
Oh, right.
And then the mystery spirals out from there with sort of people who've been reading occult texts and delving into that which should not be known, and,
ooh, okay,
you know, haunted figures in shadows in the fog.
Man.
And if you think, and you know, I think it's set in sort of New England, maybe.
Okay.
Like in America, but it's got that kind of, if you think of sort of Victorian, sort of Jack the Ripper, foggy streets, that kind of vibe.
Mm.
And the sound design is amazing. Like, you can sit there playing a game that's got full pixel art and it's mostly text-based, and the sound design and the music, like, have you right in it.
Okay.
Like, gripped, even though you're huddled over a laptop screen, you know, tapping space.
Yeah, that's got to be a sign of a fantastic soundtrack if that's how you feel about it.
And this, the whole score's amazing, but this is one from reasonably near the end when things are, the pressure's cranking up, but it's more the sort of mental pressure on the character, you know, because he starts questioning his own sanity as the game goes on and the mystery unravels.
All right, so it's a psychological dimension to it as well. Oh, that's awesome.
That kind of classic Lovecraft trope where every H.P. Lovecraft story ends with the protagonist either mad or narrating, turns out they're narrating something that's like, I must tell this tale to spare my soul. It's got that vibe to it.
Oh man, okay.
And as things sort of, your character spirals through sanity and the imagery becomes more surreal, the soundtrack escalates while retaining its sort of baseline atmospheric haunting vibe.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, so the track we have lined up is Angels Protect This House, and the composer I have is Carlos Viola. This is from The Last Door on the PC. Or what were the platform? Because it was originally a browser, right? So we could put Firefox on or something. But PC.
It was because it was originally a browser game.
And, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it standalone or in browser,
cool,
for PC, or
we'll call it PC
Mac or whatever.
Yeah, we'll just say PC for argument's sake. And let's have it then. Angels Protect This House, The Last Door. angels protect this house. Apparently, it doesn't sound like they do.
No. Well, the next track on the soundtrack that I almost picked for tonight is called Scream.
Ah, okay. It's like, just kidding. They
don't. It's like this moment of like whatever the ritual or sort of mystery that we need to free the protagonist from this sort of ongoing terror clearly doesn't work.
Wow, okay. That was really nice. Those cello parts were just what the doctor ordered. Really, really nicely composed. And the little kind of haunting piano code underpinning the whole thing. Just really, really nice. And just having a look at the screenshots on your phone there, I can see how it would suit it down to a T, with the kind of the horse-drawn carts at night and all the bleak
gaslit streets.
Yeah. It looks really nice in spite of its self-imposed graphical limitations, like down to the palette.
Yeah, it's one of those games I've seen on kind of best recent horror game lists, and then there'll be people going, oh, but what about Outlast? And you're kind of going, well, you know, or not, you know, those kind of games where it's like, oh, you've got a night vision camera and you're in a mental hospital and something's going to jump out at you. And you kind of go, great.
More jump scares.
Yeah,
great.
Whereas this is just like haunting. Like, I guess there's one of this. What I'll compare it to is one of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors, where like they're telling all the usual kind of nonsense stories, and one of them, Lisa Simpson, just tells the story of the Raven, the Edgar Allan Poe story.
All right, yeah.
You'll quote the Raven nevermore.
I think I remember
and,
that, yeah.
And Bart sat there going, that's not scary, because no one, you know, got stabbed or anything. Mm. And then it cuts to like a wider view of the treehouse, and Homer sat on the branch under a blanket, just like tremors of like fear and sort of quivering and like it's just a sort of pierced him right through in a way that sort of jump scares and gore won't.
I guess it kind of suggests that it's all about the journey rather than the climactic like it's all about like, you know, prolonged exposure to that level of bleakness.
Yeah. The next game doesn't seem so bleak.
The next game, well this is a funny one. Kind of. It's a game that I've discovered pretty recently, actually, in fishing for interesting tracks to play on this episode. And I'm really quite surprised that I haven't come across this one before. And
I hadn't heard of it. Like, hadn't even, like, never mind not played or not seen being played. Just hadn't even heard the name.
Yeah, right. It looks like the sort of thing that would be, like, legendary in how odd it is, really.
Yeah. And when I think what I was playing at the time, you know, Resident Evil at the time, what, 2, 3?
Mm.
Silent Hill.
Sure, like, yeah.
That was very much me as a teenager playing those games.
Right. And then here we have Countdown Vampires, Sony PlayStation 1999. It is, like some of those games you specify, a survival horror title set in a horror-themed casino. So, yeah, it's a very interesting setting right from the off, and it's heavy on the FMV video sequences at the top of the game to set the scene and then show you the pivotal moment where things start going wrong and people start turning into vampires. It looks kind of like a Tekken 3 end of game, like victory video sort of thing in its stylings. And you were like pointing out that the best thing in the whole video was like the cat.
Yeah, it's like the best animated thing in the. It's got that kind of like sausage arms that aren't really connected to the body's look that you got on the PlayStation.
PlayStation, God bless the PlayStation.
Your kind of legs that sort of pump independently of the body as people run.
Yeah, and the dialogue's just, oh, that's the best you could do.
Yeah.
But again, that does give it a lot of character, I would say.
I was trying to describe it to someone earlier, and the vibe I could come down with was like those sort of first fixed camera Resident Evils, but as if all the narrative influence was from Blade.
All right,
Blade movies.
So like, Wesley Snipes and Resident Evil, something like that. And so we found some comments about this game online and some questions that I think are very salient pertaining to the main character, the protagonist that you play as. You're kind of trying to get to the bottom of what's going on and stop all the badness from getting out of hand. And in the video, you are wearing a shirt. And then when everything kicks off and you start to like put things right and, you know, shoot the vampires, he just takes his shirt off for no reason and to reveal this massive tribal tattoo, which is very, very late 90s, actually, yeah, when you think about it.
That tattoo is very, like, honestly, Billy from Resident Evil Zero.
Okay.
Or if you've seen the film From Dusk Till Dawn, the character George Clooney plays.
Definitely, yeah. It's a good shout.
He's definitely in that. But both of them at least keep their vests on.
Yeah, well, what's this guy
just
doing?
Sort of like danger, top off.
In case of emergency, strip off. Like, I don't understand. But anyway, that gives you some idea of how funny and weird this title is. And I'm definitely going to have to get on this before too long because it just looks completely irresistible. Yeah, and the soundtrack moves around quite a lot. Like in the early parts of that intro video, there's some really quite, I was going to say tasteful, but that's a complete lie. Some really interesting, it's borderline surf guitar, like shadow sort of stuff with some like beats underneath it. And then when things start going wrong, the music mutates into something a bit more intense. But the track I've picked is one of the best song titles or track titles I've ever had on this entire podcast. And I've had some real Bobby Dazzlers in my time. This one is called Horrible Panic! !
That's what definitely sets off in this game.
Oh yeah, Horrible Panic! And this is composed by Kenichi Kamio. So enjoy this. Countdown Vampires, 99, Sony PlayStation. Horrible Panic! Panic.
Tops
off, lads. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, imagine if that was your reaction to like a panic, like
Horrible Panic. Tops off.
Everyone's just shirtless.
I don't know, I've been to the football.
Oh yeah.
That seems to be the vibe at St. James's Park.
Sure, well, and definitely at Newcastle, yeah, and to a lesser extent at Sunderland. I think we have more reason to panic than you at the minute. But anyway, Countdown Vampires from 1999 on the Sony PlayStation. That was Horrible Panic. And that's really good, actually. I think it's a really effective piece of music. Kind of reminds me of like the Batman animated series somehow. Like maybe the intro theme to that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that had its kind of art deco gothic thing going on.
Okay, yeah.
And that soundtrack has not quite the sort of fairy tale vibe you get from a Danny Elfman score, but like the Danny Elfman music from those like those early Batman films that then obviously influenced the animated show.
Yeah, I see.
So it's where it can be sort of action and dramatic, but it still keeps a sort of, kind of gothic-y sort of...
Yeah, I hear that.
Not spooky. It's not spooky at all, really, but it still has a sort
it's
of definite...
dark. Like, yeah. It's dark, and the sort of the orchestral kind of arrangement on display here is certainly consistent with that. Composer was Kenichi Kamiyo. And this is actually the latest credit as a composer that I can find for this composer, which I'm kind of surprised by because it sounds like pretty accomplished to me. Like, you know, the dynamics are nicely handled, how the instruments play off each other, and yeah, just kind of a shame, really.
He obviously chose to go out on top. This was his masterwork.
Yeah, sure. Countdown Vampires, you know, I'm not going to top this one. So, yeah, brilliant stuff here. And it's been nice to have this sort of piece in amongst the more like chip sound hardware-based tracks like the NES and the Mega Drive. But we have one piece left, and it is yours. Before we get into that, I'll just run past some end-of-show business. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at foreversoundversion@gmail.com. You can like this show on Facebook if you want to. That's facebook.com/foreversoundversion. And you can also follow me on Twitter. I'm reasonably active on there. And the handle is FSVpodcast. And one more thing, I'd like to give thanks to my VGM podcast friend from across the pond, the Dyad from The Dyad Presents, a VGM podcast, who very kindly sent me a sticker, which is it's a pretty neat, you've seen it,
yeah,
right? It's
a pretty, this is a great sticker.
It's a great sticker, but very niche. It's like a sort of pixel art take on Ice Cube.
I can imagine it in like being it's the kind of thing you can see is like, I can imagine being like an Easter egg somewhere planted in like Hotline Miami.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Even looks like it with the kind of the blocky kind of purple and pink.
Yeah, thing. Like if this was a poster in one of the rooms and you could see it and be like, oh, that's
wow,
that.
There's Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Ice Cube.
VGM
there.
This time.
Yeah, yeah. Because it says VGM made me do it, which is like kind of riffing on gangster rap made me do it. So really tremendous from the Dyad there. Thanks a lot. It's now on my official podcasting computer next to my SNK sticker and Streets of Rage sticker. So, yeah, thanks a lot for that. And yes, anyone listening to this who wants some more VGM podcasts in their life, check out The Dyad Presents. He's got a really, I've said this before, but he's got a really great kind of scholarly tone to how he goes about his show. And he covers like a lot of great stuff that would normally fly under the radar. So highly recommended. Rob, what do you reckon? Anything you'd like to throw in here?
I don't really have that many plugs at the minute.
Okay.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Rob, obviously.
Rob, obviously.
Yeah.
Cool.
But there'll be all kinds of nonsense on there. It's not...
Yeah.
I'm not very on point with any personal branding there. It's...
That's why I keep inviting you back.
Whatever's interesting me on the day.
Yeah.
Kind of personal vibe, but...
That's a good way to be, I think. Good stuff. All right, well, thanks again for coming over and sharing these excellent picks with me. I think you've inspired me to give this The Last Door a try, for sure, so...
Yeah, and I've... For being someone who would put horror games near the top of their, you know, what are you into list, I've discovered games sort of researching this and seeing your picks.
Yeah, Countdown to Vampires, yeah, man. Like, what on earth is this?
Which would be one of the cool things about, like, not just hearing good music, but discovering games that you'd sort of half forgotten or just never played.
No doubt, yeah, yeah. Now it's just a case of finding the time to play the damn things, but I'm going to make an effort to put some time aside around Halloween to get through a bit of Countdown Vampires and Friday the 13th. So, yeah, and enjoy the whole soundtracks in their in the contexts that the composers intended them to be heard in. So, all right, we have one more track, and it's from a really great platformer that I've played a whole lot as a young lad on the Sega Mega Drive, Castle of Illusion.
Yeah, this is an all-time classic, really, isn't it?
I think so.
Mickey's Castle of Illusion.
Good one to end on.
Yeah, and also, because my picks, there's two games which have sort of orchestrally, like, kind of Red Book scores that are both quite haunting, and then another one which was really harsh. And Halloween isn't just about being harsh or scared.
You'll have a good time too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a good, fun game where you can bash ghosts and bounce around a haunted castle.
Yeah, some quite really, really nicely designed platforming.
This is...
I've got stage 1-2, which I think is the forest.
The forest at night.
Yeah, forest at night
because
sort of stage.
Because you start off wondering, there's a kind of basic platform forest level. You have spiders.
That's right.
Kind of butterfly things.
Yeah.
The usual platform early stage. And then as you reach the castle, the forest gets darker.
Suddenly.
Yeah, the music gets spookier.
Yeah, it's cool how they do this. Like, it's like after a single sort of jaunty bar to open the track, it very quickly like descends into this like kind of chromatic style composition where all the notes exist in very tight clusters, so it just sounds on edge with like kind of ghostly, like, you know, tongue-in-cheek ghostly gestures in there. Really nicely balanced stuff for the Mega Drive sound hardware. Composer is Shigenori Kamiya, and this is again really good piece of FM synthesis style VGM from 1990. Good. All right, well, thanks again, Rob. We'll hopefully have you on again before too long, so we'll put our heads together and think of some more topics to cover.
Yeah,
good business. All right,
don't have nightmares.
Yeah, be safe, and get lots of sweets from knocking on people's doors. Yeah, Halloween's all about not just fancy dress, but it's got to be scary. It's got to be horror themed. You can't just go out dressed as like sexy fireman. No, you can't do that. It's got to be scary. All right, I just want to say that.
Yeah,
Halloween's if it has scary.
If it has this like the prefix sexy, it's
generally not a goer. Yeah. Yeah, keep Halloween scary.
Unless you were going to wear a child's costume on an adult body in the assumption that the skin on display would make it sexy, but it would definitely be scary.
Yeah, that's quite right. Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening. Here is stage 1-2 from Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse. See you next time.